Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Coming up on show 1048, another Saturday special interview, and we talk to Smart Car, a company enabling EV connectivity. Well, one of the best things about owning an EV is how connected our cars are. And we know EVs are connected via SIM cards to the internet. You can preheat, pre-cool them, whether your EV has an app which can simply do that, or more like Tesla, where you can unlock the car for someone else to even drive the thing. Most cars probably have more sensors and remote functions than most people realize. Now, there are many reasons you'd want to connect to an EV. You could see where it is if you're running a car sharing company, and you might want to allow the hirer to lock and unlock it remotely to save them having a physical key. You could see how far the car has traveled if you're an insurance company charging by the mile. Or maybe a smartphone app designer, and you want to tell your users when they're low on charge and even suggest nearby chargers or within range to get to. Well, it turns out all car companies do their own thing in terms of how your EV communicates with the outside world, and that makes it really hard for individual app developers, which is where Smart Car comes in. Smart Car provides a single point of access. If you want to build an app or a website, you can go through them. Now, let's get the CEO and co-founder on to tell us more. Sahar Skatta is here. Sahar, welcome to EV News Daily today.
Hey, Martin. Thanks so much for having me on. It's excited to be on the program today.
Well, we're going to talk about Smart Car. Now, this podcast is listened to by people interested in EVs and that the general revolution happening in mobility. So I would say our audience is pretty tech literate. We love our connected cars. Some listeners are future EV buyers, some own them already, but not necessarily a hardcore engineering audience. So don't dumb it down, but don't go hardcore. How would you describe Smart Car?
Yes, Smart Car is an API for cars. We provide developers who are building all sorts of really exciting applications for cars, the building blocks and tools so that they can make their applications and services integrate with cars very easily.
So we're going to back up one step further. What's an API?
What's an API? So an API is an application programming interface. And an application programming interface may sound super technical or complex, but there's pretty easy ways to actually understand it. It's a mechanism to transmit a message between two systems. And if you want to think about that in maybe layman's terms, you imagine yourself sitting at a restaurant and you want to order a specific meal. How do you get that message of what you want to the kitchen? And it turns out you have a waiter or waitress who is that messenger. So the waiter or waitress, you can kind of think of them as the messenger, or in this case, the API. And you give them your order. They note that down. They take it back to the kitchen, place that order. And when it's ready, they bring you the response back, which in this case is your meal. And that's essentially what an API is, enabling an application and maybe a server, for instance, to communicate with one another.
Okay. And why does the world need Smart Car? Don't the car makers already provide access to their cars to people who want to build apps for them?
It turns out they don't. And that's actually the reason why we decided to start Smart Car. My co-founder and I, if you backtrack about 4 or 5 years ago, were trying to build an app for our car. And we did the thing that any software developer does. We typed in developer and the car company's name.com and discovered that it was a dead end. It was a 404 page. And then we tried it for the next car brand and the next one and the next one, and quickly discovered that none of them really are offering developers a friendly way to integrate with vehicles. And that was kind of a shock and surprise and frustration to us. And we realized that there was a pretty big gap in the market, and every developer we knew in the Silicon Valley wanted to build something for not just their own car, but maybe for their startup or their business in some way. And they didn't really have a way to do it. So that's where we got that aha moment to say, hey, we should just solve this problem for the industry.
Okay. Well, I had a look on your, and I'm doing some research for this, that the latest figures are 72 million cars in the US that your service is compatible with. And I think many of our listeners would be surprised to know that that many cars are connected. Is there really that many SIM cards buried away in 72 million cars?
Believe it or not, absolutely. In fact, it's a lot more than that. That's just the base of cars that our platform now supports. And the thing that most don't realize is that the race to get cellular connectivity into cars began almost a decade or two decades ago, to be quite honest. And it started off maybe in some of the really expensive luxury vehicles, as you can imagine, since the profit margins are greater there and OEMs have more room to experiment with new technology. But fast forward to today, even a $18,000 car that you buy from a brand like General Motors is internet connected the moment you buy it. It's got a SIM card and it's talking to the cloud just like your cell phone does.
Okay, so over the half hour of this podcast, whatever we talk for, I wouldn't say I'm a noob, but I'm pretty new to this world of understanding how our cars connect. I'm hoping to get to the end of the show and have a much better understanding. But I would say that in the EV world, which I live most of the time, Tesla has this reputation of being ultra connected. Everything goes back to the mothership, you know, the sensors, the cameras, you know, all of that kind of stuff. How accurate is my perception of that? And are other car makers just as connected, but, you know, we don't really hear about it because kind of Elon Musk sucks a lot of the oxygen out of the room when he gets involved?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the interesting things is that you're absolutely spot on in terms of your perspective on Tesla being one of the most sophisticated. That's a great observation, and it's true. And part of why is they started the company with a clean slate design, and they architected the car and the entire infrastructure around that vehicle with telemetry connectivity in mind from day one. And they built this vehicle with software engineers from day one as well. And when you look at the rest of the car brands, that wasn't the case. These were already cars that they had processes and manufacturing cycles that had been happening for decades. And they now had to change course to insert software, insert connectivity into vehicles that were already being manufactured. And one is a little bit easier to do when you're starting off with a clean slate, and the other one comes with a lot of bureaucracy and changes that need to happen to make that even possible. So all of them are getting connected, but in terms of who might have some of the more market competitive advantages just because of the fact that they have a clean slate design, Tesla is definitely ahead of the curve on that front.
So what makes two brothers from Silicon Valley want to build stuff for cars? Because I'm going to sort of paint in broad brushstrokes here and probably not be entirely accurate. But it seems like Silicon Valley is, you know, is the hotbed of innovation of social networks and cutting edge social or engineering. And yet the car industry seems that it's stuck in the dark ages. I mean, I don't mean to offend any software engineers who work at car companies here, but the interface in most cars until kind of Tesla came along, it really sucks. Like, you can choose the radio station and, you know, the sat nav was probably so bad that you're using your mobile phone to get Google or Apple Maps instead. And kind of Apple CarPlay and Android Auto kind of changed that. So what was it about the automotive sector that made you want to start a business that helps other people build apps on top of cars?
Yeah, going back to that initial thing you asked me about, why don't car companies offer this themselves? So it actually surrounded that core topic. My co-founder and I didn't actually get into this starting to build a platform for other developers. We actually got into it because we were trying to build an app for our own car. We just wanted to see where our car is or how much we've traveled, and some really basic fun stuff like that, or just even needing to know when I need to refill my tank or when do I need to charge my EV next. And it turned out it was really hard to do this. There was just no easy way. We would have to literally knock on the doors of a car manufacturer after spending months finding the right introductions and right points of contact. And if we got lucky, you know, we'd find someone who may give us some PDF or some forwarded email thread on how to work with them. And more often than not, that was outdated by 6 or 12 months, and it was no longer even accurate. And it was a really painful experience. And that's when we got that aha moment that this is something that others are facing challenges with as well and are looking for a solution around. And actually, I want to actually change your kind of positioning on just Silicon Valley and automotive. Silicon Valley may not have been seen as the center of automotive, but I think that's perceptions changed quite largely in the last few years. You know, I live in Mountain View, California, and if I walk around anywhere near downtown Mountain View, as an example here, it's going to be no more than 5 minutes before you see 5 different types of self-driving cars with different logos of brands like Waymo, Nero, or a ton of other self-driving car tech companies driving by you. So, and if you're in San Francisco, you'll see cars from Cruise and others. So this has not just become the center for self-driving, but it's also become the center for all sorts of companies building mobility products and applications. It's again the home to Lyft and Uber as well. And it's also the home to mobility companies like DoorDash and who deliver groceries or food to you, Instacart as well. And even when it comes to infotainment and just entertainment in the car, it's also the home to Google and Apple who provide Android Auto and CarPlay. So believe it or not, it may not be seen as the manufacturing hub of the world, but it has become the software hub for cars.
Yeah, it's probably one of the issues that the, well, I sometimes say legacy car makers. I think that's a bit derogatory, and I never mean it that way. But the German powerhouses of, you know, the likes of VW and Daimler and BMW had 100 years to finesse being an assembler of tens of thousands of parts all arriving on time in their factories and making fabulous cars. And over the last 10 years, kind of been caught a little bit with the software thing and thinking, hang on, I think they're behind, but many are catching up, you know, very fast. Just on the subject of apps working in cars, so just clarify one thing for me then. So when you say you want to build an app for your car and, you know, you couldn't find any way to do it, well, I've got apps on my phone. I've got the little OBD2 dongle that sits in my car, and it tells me my electric car's state of charge, the temperature, and you know, how are the inverters working? How is that different to what you're talking about?
Yeah, so let's separate out a couple of the items you just mentioned. So when we're focused on building apps for cars, we're not talking about infotainment apps. We're talking about apps that may be on the browser on your computer or on your iPad or your iPhone or an Android device that need to communicate to the car. So it's not something that's running in the car, but something that needs to rather communicate to a car. So think about the app that lets you maybe see how much fuel you have in it or where your car is on a map. These aren't things you want to be doing in the car. You want to do it when you're outside of the vehicle, right? And the other aspect you mentioned is you have these OBD devices, and OBD devices are a little bit like a hack on making your car connected. But the reality today is that cars are already internet connected. And if you're a software developer, think about, you know, the iPhone developer or Android developer or even a startup or a real business. Developers don't want to deal with hardware. They don't want to have to tell their customers to buy an accessory to be able to use their app. That's just not even an option for the vast majority of folks in the industry. And even in industries like fleet management or auto insurance and car sharing or car rental, it turns out it's not really that great of an option there either. The economics are just really expensive to put a device in every car. People can unplug them. They get knocked out. People will unplug them for a road trip so they don't get charged for the road trip they go on. So you have all these issues that emerge when you have to put hardware in a vehicle. And if you're really an API and you're really enabling developers to do something innovative, you really have to do it entirely with software.
And it's one of the great ownership experiences of an EV. And when it's missing, it's really obvious. There's still a couple of big cars that don't have great apps, but most do. I drive a Renault Zoe day in, day out, and their app is okay. You know, the official Renault app. And it's interesting because I've never really thought about it before, but now I think about it, actually, the apps that I use for my car are third-party apps. And so these are developers that have come along and said, actually, we can do a better job. And they have, both in both UI and UX as well, in that I can't do a lot, but I can preheat my car, I'll pre-cool it, and I can see my state of charge. I can start and stop the charge, but nowhere near what a Tesla does. Let's really get into the EV world then with what you do and enabling being that layer between lots of different car companies all doing their own thing, and then an app developer or a company that wants to come along and interact in some way with electric vehicles. Let's start off with charging networks, because it's a furiously complicated thing to charge an EV, which most people don't realize. It's not just plug in and start charging. There's anywhere between, depending on what plug and protocol, 20 or 30 different things that are going on just when you plug it in, like, how much charge can you give me? I can take this. Please supply that. How, talking to the BMS. So in terms of charging networks, it's easy for Tesla. Nothing's easy, but it's easier when they have their walled garden of their superchargers. It's all under their control. But for everyone else, it must be really difficult. So how does that all join up in terms of all the different car makers doing their own thing, all the different hardware makers doing their own thing in terms of the chargers, and then all the different networks that want to come in and layer in things like pricing and all those things? So can you talk a little bit about this really complicated subject?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the fundamental thing that, similar to what we're solving for the automotive industry and cars themselves, I think really what we need to see in the EV charging side of things is similarly APIs and open networks. And that creates interconnections, interoperability between all charging networks and stations. And I hope we can get to that point. In some ways, it is unfortunate that, we have gas stations, which are already compatible with any car anywhere today, and you don't need to go to a specific gas station if you have a specific brand. And in some ways, it's a little unfortunate that it seems like we're going in the reverse direction. But I think that will reverse course in the coming years, and hopefully that we won't need to have exclusive stations for our specific vehicles. But the area that we're helping out with is not solving this whole problem, but certain aspects of it. And I can maybe touch on one or two examples. I think you may have had the founder of EV Passport on the program in the past, and we're huge fans of what Aaron is doing. And I can talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we're working together on. Today, if you think about their level two chargers, they're installing in multi-unit family dwellings. These are really amazing products that make it easy for apartment complexes to offer their residents chargers. But level two chargers, as it turns out, don't really have a way to know the state of charge of a vehicle. You know whether it's charging or not, but the charger doesn't know whether you're at 1% or 80%. That data just doesn't exist between the charger and the vehicle. So that creates a lot of problems. If you need to distribute load, and you have three cars plugged in an apartment complex, and you can maybe charge only two of them at full speed or one of them at full speed, how do you know which one to prioritize? If you had the information of the state of charge of each vehicle through an API like Smart Car, you can potentially say, hey, we don't need to worry about topping off this person that's already at 95%. We should probably prioritize the charge of the person who has a long way to go currently, so that their car enters a range where they can actually reasonably drive it. And when it comes to moving cars, that's another major issue. You don't know that you need to move your car until the charging is done, typically, on most of these public level two chargers. But if you now have an idea that this car is going to finish charging within the next 10 minutes or 20 minutes, you can potentially give a heads up to that resident to come out and move their vehicle on time by giving them a heads up in advance of when their car actually finishes charging. And even on just bring people in at chargers, a lot of chargers go unused, because people don't know where they are. And that doesn't work for the economics, right? A charger that you install, you make up your return on it typically by getting people to use it as much as possible. And when it's at full utilization, you eventually paid it off. So by being able to tell consumers who have an EV that their car is low on power, because you can get the state of charge from their car, and then navigating them to a charger that's available nearby to get them to actually charge up their vehicle there, also helps pay off the economics of putting chargers that are often underutilized to full utilization, so that you can efficiently get people charged back up, consumers have a better EV ownership experience, and the economics makes sense for multi-unit family dwellings, where it may not have made sense in the past to install chargers if they don't think they're going to get used.
That makes so much sense to me now. And I've never done the deep thinking on that before. But of course, a DC fast charger that is anywhere between, you know, $15,000 and $30,000 to install has quite complicated hardware to liaise with the BMS in the car. And that's where you can log on and see your state of charge on your car. But you're right, a level two charger that's $500 to $1,000, which is in a way a great solution for anyone who's going to be parked up for a long time, or destination charging. There's that argument of like, would you rather one fast charger or 30 of them in a parking lot? You know, what would you prefer? That I've never thought about how unconnected they are. And that's why, because those charging networks can't talk to the car. But actually, what Smart Car does, if I understand it right, sitting as that layer between the car and everything else, it enables you to talk to the car directly via that connectivity that our cars have, rather than going through the charger and into the BMS. So that's really fascinating. And how does it work in terms of talking to the cars on a regular basis? Like, obviously, you know, if you wanted, through your API, you could ask a car, what's your state of charge on an hour, a daily basis, or even an hourly basis? But what sort of use cases, you know, who would want to know the state of charge every hour, for instance?
Yeah, there's tons of different applications and products that all have a variety of different use cases. And I also want to touch on one last piece you mentioned, even the DC fast chargers. Bear in mind, you're correct that they can get the state of charge when it's plugged in, but that network can't get the state of charge of a car when it's not plugged in. So if you want to drive, yeah, if you want to drive traffic to their charger in a shopping mall that's going unused, how do you know which customers who are nearby may need a recharge and give them an offer or a push notification to say, hey, slot number one, three blocks away is open right now. Come on in and charge. So that's a huge game changer, enabling charging networks to be able to have that insight from their customers. And consumers often want to opt into this because charging is already a problem for them. They want to be able to know when they can charge at their best convenience by getting things like push notifications. So that is something that we're seeing consumers be incredibly excited about. And you were talking a little bit about the second question, which is why would an application need to get your state of charge or your charging status? And I can give you another example of this. We have about a dozen customers in the space of a new market called managed EV charging. And these are companies that are building solutions for utilities to address the demand response and load of EVs plugging into the grid to pull power out of it to charge these vehicles. And it's become a problem in a lot of markets. If you think of the Silicon Valley, one county out here we're aware of has 25, 30,000 EVs already in Silicon Valley. And they anticipate within the next 24, 36 months, there's going to be about 150,000 or something of that sort EVs in the same county. So what they're worried about is in a year or two from now, you're going to have 100, 150,000 cars coming home at the same time between maybe 4 to 7 p.m. and plugging their car in all at the same time. And you may have a blackout or a big disaster. So how do you distribute that? How do you load balance that? How do you get to a point where you can charge the cars at the right times of day and give people the right rates or better rates by doing that more efficiently? So one of our customers I can highlight is a company called Rolling Energy Resources. And they are doing something pretty innovative with quite a few different amazing utility companies. They're letting consumers, kind of like how you may opt into a smart thermostat program where you let your utility have control of your thermostat on the craziest of hot days of the year, where they may adjust or dial back your thermostat a degree or two, or just offset turning it on for another half hour or hour. They're letting consumers opt in to do that with their EV. So just by maybe pushing out charging an extra hour or 3 hours or 2 hours, consumers are able to save as much as 50% on charging their car in any given month. And the reason they need the information you asked about is by knowing whether that car is plugged in or not, whether that car is charging or not, then they can actually send signals to these vehicles to actually start charging or stop charging at the right time of day. So it's important not to be able to just get information from these cars at the right time, but also being able to change the state of charging of these vehicles so that the grid is more balanced and consumers get better rates for charging their vehicle.
Yeah, that makes so much sense now, because I was talking on the podcast recently about VW's Power Day, which is a kind of similar to Tesla's Battery Day they had last year. In March, VW were talking about their ambition to integrate EVs with power grids, so either vehicle to grid or vehicle to or X, really, vehicle to home, etc. To balance the power draw and store renewables when we have an excess, for instance, and talking to the car and saying, you know, I need to leave with 80% tomorrow morning, so you do what you got to do, but when I get up at 6 a.m., be ready. Of course, they're an OEM, so they've got control over the car, the software, the battery, the warranty that applies to that battery, whereas that relies on VW saying, we're going to become a utility company, or we are going to choose which utility company we work with to execute it. But that's fine if you're VW, but there's obviously hundreds of utility companies in every part of the world, so it's fine for them. They've made the cars. They understand it. But I've never fully appreciated the need to have an API that talks to every possible EV across every brand to do that for third parties. And I think I understand a little bit more that what you're saying is actually, sure, like VW can do it. Tesla can do it with their Powerwall because they invented the products. But actually what is needed, if you are just an app developer wanting to come to the market with a solution, is you need something that joins up all those cars rather than going to 20 different car companies and saying, okay, how do I work with this one? How do I work with that one? You've got that covered. Is that kind of right?
Exactly. And we're actually not even at the phase of vehicle to grid. We're actually just still on the grid to vehicle thing, but we're just having better control of the grid to vehicle. So it's not about yet pulling power back out of the cars and putting it back into the grid. We're still at the basic phase of when you put power from the grid into the car. And it turns out even just solving that piece is actually incredibly valuable for a lot of parties.
Let's talk about insurance. And obviously Tesla have their own insurance product in California, looking to roll it out elsewhere. But again, they build the cars. They have all the access to the data. But presumably with connected cars, that opens up a world of opportunity for reduced pricing, or at least more understanding about how cars are used and perhaps even driven. Is that right? How do insurance companies have stakes in connecting to cars?
Yeah. So, you know, for decades, insurance has been a business where they've had to use the best available information to make decisions to assess and rate someone's risk, to determine how you write them whether you write them a policy or not, and what that should cost. And the factors they've had to use in the past are things like marital status or your zip code or some other type of information, or your credit score, right? Things that aren't really assessing how you actually drive, which is where the risk actually is. So when it comes to something as basic as how much did this person drive in any given month, that's not information that an insurance company typically has even today. They don't have that information, and they can't trust to call you to ask you how much you drove because everyone lies about it. So how do they get this information, and how can they get it accurately? How can they get it cost effectively without needing to put a tracking device in the car, which can be seen as very invasive? And how do they let consumers opt in to share just the specific pieces of information that really need to be shared to be able to get a better service? So to give you an example of another one of our customers in the space, we have a really amazing company called Just Insurance. And if you're in, I think, Arizona and a couple other states, you can now sign up for it just by installing the app on your iPhone. And this startup, they're doing something really innovative. They're doing away with the credit score. And instead, they're letting you really pay for insurance just by the mile. And the way they're getting the mileage from the car is actually through Smart Car. Consumers, when they install this app, can go through a linking process. They need to OAuth their car as username and password and hit accept on a set of few permissions. And these permissions will show them, we're asking for something very specific, your VIN, your odometer reading, and I think maybe that's it. And if the consumer is comfortable sharing just this, they're not getting maybe their live location, they're not getting anything else that's intrusive. And if the consumer is comfortable, they can opt into this program, and now they get charged by the mile. And if you think about the fundamental transformativeness of this, you know, you had an era where, think about maybe you came out, Martin, you came out to the US, you may not have a credit history here. You want to get an insurance policy because you're new to the United States. You're going to get a ridiculous rate for your insurance. And it's not because you are a good or not good bad driver. It's because you don't have a good credit history in the United States. And that makes fundamentally no sense. So this really empowers a lot of demographics who are underserved by the machine of insurance that already exists today to have a much more equitable experience for the very first time. And telemetry is driving that to become actually possible for the first time as well.
And as you talk, my mind is kind of racing on a very specific example here in the UK. We have a thing called vehicle excise duty. It's called road tax, kind of is the not the slang term, but it's what everyone calls it. But it's waived on EVs. And so it's based at, now it's these days it's charged on CO2. But, you know, it can be £1, £2, £3, £5, £800 a year. It used to be a little paper disc that sat in our windscreen. And to prove that we had it, it gets sent in the post every year and we'd stick it in, you know, inside the glass. And of course, then it went away and it's all digital now, but still it's waived for EVs. And occasionally I'll interact with someone on social media that'll say, well, you know, when we're all got EVs, who's going to pay for road building? And I say, well, you know, this thing, we don't really have road tolls. It's more of a European thing in France and Germany, etc. We don't have road tolls in the UK. There's a couple, but actually paying per mile would be one solution. And I've always kind of flippantly said, oh, well, we could just pay for how much we drive. And I've never thought about, well, how would that actually work? How would the government know how far we've driven? Because I'm cautious with my personal data. But from what you've just said, another example of actually using that connectivity to solve potential issues. So, I was just... my mind was racing.
You're coming up with our business model for us here. It's super exciting. Actually, we were one of the first companies to pilot this with the state of California a few years ago. And California, as you can imagine, is a hotbed of electric vehicles. And they also, much like you, realized a few years ago that right now you can maybe incentivize EVs. But if everything is an EV, your infrastructure is going to crumble because you're not collecting any tax dollars from drivers for use of the roads. The tax is never designed to be on the energy source. It was designed for the usage of the roads, which are two fundamentally very different things. And actually today, we're now in production for over a year with the state of Utah, which is charging drivers in the state based on the number miles they drive.
Oh, wow.
And a company called Emovis, which is a really well-known international tolling company, is the company that's taken our technology and implemented it for the state of Utah. So if you are an EV driver and eventually all car drivers in the state of Utah, in the coming years, you are going to need to pay by the mile. And that's just the most equitable way to do it, irrespective of whether your car is gas, hybrid, electric, or maybe hydrogen or something else that comes up. And that's super exciting to us because it's fair, right? If you drive 1 mile, you cause 1 mile of wear and tear on the road. If you drive 100 miles, you cause 100 miles of wear and tear on the road. So it's a very accurate association to contribute back to the infrastructure that you're driving. And I also just want to add one last comment, which is if you think about EV drivers, I know we always get a pushback saying, oh, you're going to kill EVs, all this type of stuff. But what I want to point out is if you actually look at the research that state of California, state of Oregon, Utah put out, this is actually a huge benefit to EV drivers, which they don't realize. If you think about our infrastructure being poor, whether it's in the UK or out here, if you have potholes, you have uneven roads, what that means is you're getting way less MPG or range on your vehicle because the roads are not well maintained. If it's a smooth, perfectly paved, well-maintained road, you're getting way better efficiency on your car. And if there are potholes, if there's gravel in the road, that means a broken axle, a damaged tire, a broken windshield. That's what happens when you don't contribute to your own infrastructure. So for every some number of cents that you contribute to our infrastructure, you're actually saving money on not having to do repairs on your car. And I think when people look at it from that perspective, they get that aha moment that this is actually something that I do want to invest in for myself and for the future.
I want to leave enough time at the end of the podcast to talk about security and privacy. It's a big issue, and we want to cover that off. But a final use case, very quickly, is I had the CEO of a car sharing. Well, they're a subscription company actually here in the UK. So obviously, there's the likes of Uber and Lyft where you can use a car to get a lift somewhere. There's the likes of Turo where you can use somebody else's car. But what this company does here in the UK is it's a minimum of a month, but it can go longer. it's not really long-term car hire because you feel like the car is yours. It's in your driveway for at least a month. It's one price. They cover insurance and everything like that. But they have an app which unlocks the car, which locks the car, which tells them, it tells you how much charge is on it, for instance. But I was talking to him about, because I was driving the Jaguar I-Pace from them, and saying, look, your app is good, but if I had a Tesla from you, I'd be like, oh man, like the app from you guys doesn't do what the Tesla app does. And he was saying, yeah, it's a really big problem for them, because each different car maker is kind of better and worse on a scale of how much access they can get into their cars. But all of their cars are essentially locked, unlocked, and state of charge with the app. So I can see a use case here with other companies around the world with a similar business model, but all of a sudden that app can be much more feature rich, like the OEM's native app would be, because you know you want to do stuff like turn the heating on or off or cooling and things like that. So even those kind of companies, they need your service because they're going to have, you know, 5 or 10 different types of manufacturer on their books. And again, they don't want to be going to every individual car company saying, like, oh, we've got one app and now we're trying, because they're smaller companies with, you know, maybe 1 or 2 devs on their team or something. So is that a business case as well for those kind? Because just very quickly, I do say to people sometimes the best car is no car. Like, your personal cars, depending on the research, are stationary between 95 and 98% of the time. And I'm like, that can't be right. Let me do the maths. Oh, God, it's right, isn't it? Like, my car never moves. And like, sometimes 5 or 6 people using one car is better for the planet and resources. So is that another good way to use that technology for kind of car sharing companies?
Yeah, you know, I think putting the cars that are unused to better use is always a good thing. And this is another area that we've had a lot of success in and we're seeing a lot of enthusiasm from. Turo, which you mentioned, is actually a key customer, and our technology is in use today. So if you open the Turo app and you reserve a car, there's a lock and unlock button there, and that's entirely powered by Smart Car. Wow. But even a large number of smaller car sharing companies, including Nababil, which is in Norway, or Gomor, which is a really popular car sharing service in Denmark, and even Urban Connect in Switzerland. All of those companies are actually using Smart Car's technology under the hood. And as you said, a lot of their companies have relatively small dev teams. They don't have the resources to go integrate with 20, 30 different car brands. That's a really painful thing to actually have to do and maintain. So these companies have been able to introduce connected car capabilities into their products really, really quickly in a matter of a week. And it's just super exciting to us, because if you're now renting out that car, the vehicle owner you don't need to go meet someone to get that key. You can just literally press a button in an app, walk up to it, unlock it, and drive. And that's a fundamental game changer for all the emerging car sharing companies out there.
Let's get on to the final topic, which is so vast. I don't know how we keep this down to the last 5 minutes, but security and privacy. Oh my goodness. I mean, I don't want some strange server in a random country knowing where, when, how fast I drove, and all of that. So how do you approach that subject of, like, connectivity is great, and I always, you know, I pay for a lot of things. Like, I pay for all the Apple services. I pay for Microsoft and their suite and OneDrive, etc., because I don't want to be advertised to. And then in other cases, I'm happy to give up a little bit of my personal data to access a free piece of software or a free service. When it comes to mobility, it's a very personal thing, isn't it? You know, we don't think about it with our phones. We all carry them around now, and yet they all know where we've been at all times. But with cars, it's going to take some getting used to, somebody knowing where we've been. How do you approach that subject?
Yeah, it's actually, in our opinion, not a tough one. It's actually quite straightforward from our perspective here at Smart Car. But what I do want to highlight is we fundamentally think the industry has typically, or in the past few years, headed down the wrong direction. They've headed down a dark path of often thinking there's an opportunity to sell our customers' data or monetize it or sell it to advertisers or marketers or whatever it is. And we fundamentally disagree with that entire premise. And from day one at SmartCar, we don't store any car data in our infrastructure. So you can't come to us to buy someone's location or their driving behavior or their odometer or anything of that sort. And we wouldn't have anything to sell you even if you came to us with it. And that's just a fundamental stance we took from day one. But what we're rather in the business of is enabling consumers like you to connect your Zoe to an application that you want to choose to use. And you need to go explicitly through a consent flow and hit yes on the permissions. And if you choose to do that, that's your choice. And yes, you chose to give the application some information, but you did it because you knew that you were going to get some value back from that experience. And this is no different than you installing an app on your phone today, whether it's Android or iOS. And those apps can't just steal your data. You have to specifically hit, yes, I will give it access to my contact list. Yes, I will give it access to my my location or my phone number or different pieces of information. And we fundamentally think the car should work in the exact same way. There should be zero outlets for people being able to buy data, whether it's aggregated or not, or identifiable or not. That should not even be an option. But rather, we should be providing consumers with the control and empowerment to be able to decide what apps they want to use, and they can choose to opt into it and accept some permissions if they do want to get a good experience. And that's simple as that.
So that whole row between Apple and Facebook over the upcoming version of iOS that will explicitly say, do you want to allow Facebook X amount of data, is probably going to do a lot to highlight to people what permissions they're giving. You know, it's that old cliche about every time iTunes updated and you had to agree to the T's and C's, like, yes, scroll down, 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 yes, go. Like, nobody ever read them. Do you think there is still work to do? And that sounds like a loaded question, doesn't it? But, like, what work is there to do to educate consumers and to ensure that people using or creating apps for whatever platform do it responsibly and educate consumers so they fully understand what information they're giving up? Because an insurance company would say, we want to know where, total miles driven, possibly even things like how you've driven to get a price. And I think they would, like a big company, like, would operate ethically. But how do we ensure that all companies are educating consumers to know what you're giving up?
I think there's an opportunity in the coming years to have some regulation around this. And as a startup, founders typically don't want regulation, but in our opinion, we actually look at it from another perspective. We think it's in fundamental benefit of consumers, developers, and the whole industry as a whole if there's trust around vehicles. And the only way to do that is if there is some level of regulation that's the right type of framework that still enables and fosters creativity and innovation, but still you can achieve that while balancing privacy. Security and privacy don't need to come at the cost of experiences. And we think that's fundamentally possible here at SmartCar, and we're already doing that today. And we hope that the car manufacturers will support kind of this philosophy as well. And just based on what you're seeing with your mention of Apple and Google out here, they're also headed in that direction of taking privacy more and more seriously. And we hope we can continue to be an example, not just for the Silicon Valley out here, but for the rest of the country and the world at large in terms of how they should fundamentally transform about car data ownership and car data privacy and car data security. And at the end of the day, it's really simple. If you own a car, that's your information, and that's our stance on it.
Wow. Oh, what a great place to end, and food for thought as well. And maybe we'll catch up again in the future, and I can quiz you more on other things that have confused me to do with this area. But I feel like I've understood so much more than I did at the start of the show, and I just love EVs and connected cars, and it's a fascinating chat. So thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely, Martin. That's wonderful being on the program. Great questions, and look forward to being back on in the future.
Well, that's our show this week. I feel like I've got a much better understanding now of how our cars connect online, and why until now there hasn't been as many apps available in the various app stores or even websites that can do way more with our cars than I suppose many do at the moment. You can check out what they do, find out more at smartcar.com, leave a comment below for me, we can keep the conversation going, and if you like the interview, give us a thumbs up so I know to make more like this, and I'll see you soon.